Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and you're listening to Beta. Read any bitter books lately? Have you watched any salty television? Listen to any really great umami music? My fellow Canadian, Benjamin Arrett, is the author of Elements of Taste, Understanding What We Like and Why. And he's come up with a mind-bendingly delicious and nutritious way to figure out what entertainment you should be consuming.
So basically, I was researching taste and how we might be able to make more sense of it. If there might be some way to get beyond good taste, bad taste, highbrow, lowbrow, something that was more sort of useful to people to figure out what they liked and what they should like more of and how they could find more of what they liked. And from that, I found some research about how you can take all of these genres. These researchers looked at a whole bunch of genres on Amazon, on IMDb, at Barnes & Noble, all these sort of genres of books and movies and television shows, and broke them down into something like 110 categories, and then put them in front of a wide range of people, thousands of people, and had them sort of recombine them based on what they liked and how they would sort of categorize these different cultures. And from that, they sort of came up with these five basic categories, which were communal, thrilling, dark, cerebral, and aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And so then I was looking at this research, which I found fascinating, and I thought, five basic kinds of taste. Wait a minute, we have five basic kinds of taste on the tongue. You have your sweet, sour, salty, bitter, and umami. So maybe there's something there. Basically, I teased this out and pushed this idea to its logical limits and got to the point where I thought, you know, you can basically say that there are sweet books and sour movies and salty songs and bitter poetry and umami documentaries. And you can take things and see how they might recombine all of those things, just as lots of foods are a little bit sweet, a little bit sour, a little bit salty. Same with culture.
Let's explore how some of these literal tastes translate into cultural tastes. For example, sweet. What does it mean to crave sweetness in culture?
So sweetness sort of starts my first taste, because that's the first taste that every child likes. You don't take candy from a baby for a reason. And it's sort of the taste of cultural comfort. It's the taste that tells you everything's going to be okay. Most pop songs are sweet, romantic comedies, sitcoms, sort of things that have happy endings and reassure you. And it's sort of cultural comfort food, like ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it is also the prevalent taste in all culture, because often when we turn to entertainment, we don't want to necessarily be challenged. We want to be comforted. Sometimes too much so. Sometimes way too much sweet stuff, and movies always end the way you expect. The hero always wins. So yeah, depending on your taste, but just to know that going in, you're like, of course this is sweet. Just the way they add sugar to spaghetti sauce, they make sure that every movie has a hero who is easy to root for.
Yeah. You say that sweetness, you describe it in terms of culture as the taste of innocence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when I walk through the five, that is definitely the one you start from. So that's where, you know, of course everything's going to end up fine. That's a very sort of the first thing we're taught, and all kids' storybooks end that way, and on purpose, it's just very reassuring.
Yeah, and as you said, that's what we're looking for in entertainment, to escape the dystopian times in which we live.
Mm-hmm.
Often, yeah. That's what we're looking for, is some escapism. So if you do like your culture on the sweet side, what kind of music will you like?
I think you can basically turn on the radio and hear just about anything. Certainly most pop songs have that sort of sweet note. It's interesting to notice that country music often doesn't. That'll get a little more into the bitter and into sort of the challenges of life. But you listen to, say, Bruno Mars. Most of his songs are very much surface level, very danceable, very hummable. You're not really necessarily engaging with the lyrics, but it makes you want to dance,
mm-hmm.
which is great. I mean, that's what it sets out to do, and that's what it does.
But what about a band like Coldplay? Would you consider them to be sweet?
Very sweet, and they're very communal. They really hit that emotional note. People will start crying at a Coldplay concert, but there's no definitive reason why. They're not talking about anything specific. It's just sort of general emotional notes that they're hitting.
Yeah.
So I think that's very sweet. And obviously there's plenty to be said that has been said and is most often said against Coldplay. But the fact is they hit that note really, really well.
Mm-hmm. And it's not necessarily a sweetness in the terms of being saccharine and kind of, you know, something treacly and like a Hallmark card. We're not necessarily saying that, right, when you describe them as sweet?
I'm not, but I know that lots of people would.
Yeah, yeah. I was just guessing at numbers and figures, pulling the puzzles apart. So If we look at the opposite of sweet, that is sour. Can you talk about how sour maps onto culture?
Yeah, I'm not sure sweet and sour are opposites. It's interesting how they relate to each other. The way I sort of think about it is that you go from sweet to sour in a natural evolution of taste. Sour is very much a thrilling culture. So just as a kid who gets sick of sweet candy can easily go to sour candy in the same candy store, at the same convenience store, wherever they're buying their candy, you can get Warheads and Sour Patch Kids and that sort of thing. It's not as sort of family-friendly. It's a little bit transgressive, but not really. You're still consuming a lot of glucose fructose. So yeah, I think, and the cultural sour note hits that as well. So that's more thrilling culture. I think of Mad Magazine. I think of like roller coaster rides. I think of anything that a parent is not necessarily going to love, and that's what makes it good for like a teenage boy, basically.
Mm-hmm. Is it also, I think, if I recall correctly, sour you also describe as being like the taste of rebellion?
Exactly, yeah. So it's something like, I guess, the Vice Media brand is like perfectly sour. Like,
yeah.
Even though they do documentaries, they do good journalism, but the whole thing that's made it a billion-dollar brand is that it hits this sort of sour note. It's not the kind of news your father is going to watch, your grandfather is going to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much aimed at youth. And to be a youth brand, you basically have to be sour.
Yeah. Speaking of sour youth brands, would something like the iconic punk rock band The Sex Pistols, would you consider them sour culture?
Yeah, when you look at rebellion, I mean, punk was all about rebellion. I think what's very interesting about punk is that, you know, it's not really a genre that continues today. I mean, it's obviously permeated into all sorts of different genres, but the ethos of punk, the sort of green mohawk and piercings, et cetera, is, I mean, teenagers still dress like that. So it's like, it's more than just a genre of music. It's sort of a whole ethos that continues.
One of the examples of sour culture that I found very fascinating, because I'd never heard of it before, is something called blarping, which sounds like a sound effect that Don Martin would write in one of his Mad Magazine cartoons, but it's not. What actually is blarping?
So LARPing, of course, is live action role play. So that's, you know, everything from Civil War reenactors to Dungeons and Dragons in real life. LARPing is this sort of hilariously subversive business live action role play. Yeah, most famous sort of LARPer is a Australian teenager who started this entire group on Facebook where they would just basically circulate inter-office memos and discuss the kind of really boring things that adults discuss in a cubicle situation.
Yeah, and I suspect they were probably quoting from movies like the cult comedy Office Space.
Yeah, you apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out. Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah. Yeah, I have the memo right here. I just forgot. But it's not shipping out till tomorrow, so there's no problem.
Yeah.
Why do you think it is important for us to understand what we like and why we like it?
Most immediately, I think we can find more of what we like if we know what we're looking for. That was my primary motive in writing this book. I wanted to be able to understand what it was that I liked and why. And the why is something that was hard to put my finger on, because back in the old days, you could say, well, I like this genre of music and I like these kind of movies. But all of culture is basically mashed up now. There's action movies these days are much smarter than they would have been, say, 20, 30 years ago. TV series are making references and playing off each other. Everything is so interconnected and so much smarter that you can't just pick a genre and think that that's going to do it for you.
Yeah. So has this theory that you've created, this elements of taste, grand unified theory of taste, has this helped you to understand why you like the kinds of culture that you like?
So going back to the food metaphor, it really helps me think that I don't necessarily like one kind of movie or one kind of culture. I don't just eat, you know, steak and mashed potatoes. Different times of day, different moods, different circumstances. You'll want to hear different music. You'll want to watch different movies. You'll want to read different books. I point out that one of the hardest questions that you could possibly ask someone is, what kind of music do you like? Because what do you mean, like at a party, at the gym, on a date, by myself, cleaning the kitchen? What am I doing while I listen to this music? Or am I at a concert? I think it's important to realize, just as we've had much more range of possible culture to consume, we are much more able to consume all that culture than we have traditionally given ourselves credit for.
As you said, we find different uses for the culture. You say that bitter
is the taste of repulsion. So if people like bitter flavors like beer and coffee, does that mean they're going to like Roman Polanski's 1965 psychological horror film, Repulsion? Or am I being too literal here?
Repulsion, a frightening film that takes the everyday world and distorts it, taking you inside the mind of a girl driven to insanity.
I think you're on the right track.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
Polanski has his own issues, which would probably be beyond the scope of this conversation. I think the central idea there is challenging. So these things are repulsive upon first taste. I mean, Polanski might continue to be repulsive. The idea is that you like to challenge yourself with things that are not necessarily easy to like. So coffee and beer are both interesting because they're both such popular beverages, but the first time you taste either of them, you are repulsed. You don't want to have more of that. I mean, if you think of something like kale or broccoli, leafy green vegetables that are very good for you, but they're an acquired taste.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, once you like them, I mean, kale is hugely popular. So once you like them, you really get into them. And then there's a part of it where it's sort of enjoyable to like them because it signifies so much about who you are. I mean, you can go to any independent cafe in any major city and you can see people who are there because they want to be seen there and because they like the coffee they have there.
Yeah. So can you give me an example of a bitter culture, a bitter film, bitter music or something? Or a bitter literature? Bitterature, I guess we might call it. Or maybe not.
You know, one of the like classic examples is Jonathan Franzen. Because I think a lot of people who write literature that is aiming for something complex and dense have a difficult time when they become sort of universally popular or popular beyond that sort of group of people who they know appreciate exactly what they're doing. So I think of, and this is going back a ways, but I think of when The Corrections came out and Oprah Winfrey picked it for her book club, that was famously very uncomfortable for Franzen because he didn't necessarily want to be picked by Oprah's book club. So
yeah.
Basically, he's doing something bitter, and then sort of this queen of sweetness picks it, and he doesn't necessarily want to be there, even though what he was writing is arguably his books managed to combine enough of the elements of taste that they appeal to a lot of people. There's just that walking that walk of doing something artistic that is accessible. For some artists, that's a sign that you're not doing something challenging enough.
Umami has been called the fifth taste. How would you define the taste of umami?
The thing they famously say it's impossible to taste. If you take a bunch of MSG powder and mix it in water and drink it, you don't really taste anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind of thing you add it to something and physically the actual taste is, and it accentuates the flavors. So I map it onto the idea of a cerebral culture, this sort of stuff that has a deep umami ribbon where you sort of taste it or you see it and you think there's so much there and I want to know more about it. Say you're watching a movie and it's the kind of movie where you wish you could take the camera and like tilt it like 20 degrees to the left to see what else is going on in this crazy world. That's what I find is like a really umami culture. I think of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. It's an Amazon Prime show by the Gilmore Girls creator.
Yeah, Amy Sherman Palladino.
She creates this world, whether it's accurate or not is really beside the point, of what like a 1950s New York comedy scene would be like. And you just want to be in that world. And she gives you everything you need to be in there. And the references go fast and that it sort of appeals to that part of our brains that just wants more and more and more information.
Benjamin Arrett is the author of Elements of Taste, Understanding What We Like and Why. And by the way, did you know that the actor who portrays Mrs. Maisel, Rachel Brosnahan, was born in Milwaukee? Our conversation with Benjamin got us wondering which one of his taste categories would Beta fit into? Sweet? Sour? Salty? Bitter? Umami? Let us know. Just send us an email to beta@wpr.org or tweet us @WPRBeta.